Hello, all, and welcome back to Ladies of Gumption, episode 47. Thank you for being a friend. I almost forgot the song.
Thank you for being a friend.
There you go. You can do it instead. We are Ladies of Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. I am Tatiana, and I'm here with
Jessica
and May.
And you can find us on Twitter at DC TV Gumption, on Tumblr at Ladies W Gumption, and on iTunes or on Google Play, Ladies with Gumption. You can also contact us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com or on our individual Tumblrs, Valerie M. Fittis, Fall in Love in a Flash for Jessica, and Her Own Hero Writer for May. Now, we got actually quite a bit of feedback from Tumblr this time around, so thanks, y'all, for responding to us. And most of y'all we responded to on Tumblr as well, but we do have a couple of corrections. Magister Black and Agent Liberty are two different characters, which I did not realize that we suggested were not two different characters, because they are, yes. Magister Black is being played by David Ajala, and he's going to be a recurring character, whereas Agent Liberty is the one played by some dude named Sam, and he is a series regular. And Mercy Graves, the actress who plays Mercy Graves, does have South Asian heritage. Whether or not she will be played as such on the show, we do not know. Now, we have some new news about my apparently new favorite show in the DC TV universe, which is Doom Patrol, that has cast Diane Guerrero as, Odiana Guerrero as Crazy Jane. So, success for all of us. Yeah. Obviously, we're going to have to watch it. I assume that we're going to see her first in Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, Titans. In Titans.
I'm not so sure, because I feel like Titans is already wrapped. And, like, this news with Diana is, like, pretty recent. So, I don't know if maybe she's not part of the
Doom Patrol episode.
Yeah, the backdoor pilot. But that means, like, I love this. But that means she also can't be, like, Renee Montoya. So,
and, yeah, that's theory. True. That's true.
But, well, happy for her.
Yes, I am happy for her. I'm just wondering how big, like, she is one of the members of the Doom Patrol, but, like, were the other characters from the Doom Patrol announced when they were cast for the episode in Titans?
Yes.
Oh, they were. Oh.
I just ignored them.
Because, like, we covered, like, the in our, like,
the feedback. I remember we covered the characters, but I didn't remember covering the actors. I'm sure they were. I mean, obviously they were cast, so.
I know we talked about there's a black guy cast, uh-huh. And there was the guy that was supposed to be, like, the leader of the Doom Patrol that we talked about cast.
Okay.
And then maybe one or two others, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I'm definitely looking forward to that episode now, so then we can see what Doom Patrol itself will actually be like. All right, that's pretty much it for news. So now we can move on to...
it's not. It's not because Suzanne... Well, it's not really... I guess it's...
Oh, that's right. This is news.
But
yeah, you're right. So for The Flash, it's been announced that Caitlin's father is coming on the show, first of all. He is Thomas. So just in case we were concerned, who is Thomas? Thomas is Caitlin's father. And as one would imagine, this means that Suzanne Walters, who played Caitlin's mom, is going to be back for season 4. And I think she even tweeted about season 5. That's right. I forget the time moves on. So the actress even tweeted, I think, suggesting that she had scenes with Hartley, right?
Makes sense.
Oh, did she? Yeah. I just saw her tweet about working with Danielle again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well then, never mind.
Which
but
we assume is also with Hartley, because he's going to be helping her investigate. So
right, mm-hmm. At the very least, we'd imagine that he will meet the parents, but maybe not. Maybe he just points her in the right direction. Anyway, is that it for news, my friends?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, well, a PSA. Apparently, Candace didn't know that you could toast PB&J, and also she likes it chunky, which people were very upset that she likes chunky peanut butter and jelly, or peanut butter, so I just have to admit that I, too, only eat chunky peanut butter, and I have to buy two separate jars so that everyone else can eat their creamy, and I can have my chunky.
I will say that when I was like a kid, and this is like a kid thing, and I don't know if it's still, I was in my marshmallow phase, mm-hmm. but I have like PB&J, and it wasn't toasted. So I was not that refined yet. But I did put marshmallows in my peanut butter and jelly, and I microwaved it like a little bit so that
the
got like gooey.
Yeah.
And that is like the bomb.com.
Yeah, I used to, not with the marshmallows, but I used to put it in the microwave, and then I was like, but then the bread is all gooey. Like, I just want the peanut butter to be gooey. And then I was like, oh, I can toast it, and then the peanut butter will get warm, and the bread will still be strong. So
my mom used to toast my bread, yes, before she put on the peanut butter and jelly, and then I moved into not toasting my bread as an adult and mixing the jelly all together and just putting the peanut butter on the untoasted bread.
That's sad. Why did that happen?
Because I just like peanut butter more than jelly, okay?
Like deconstructed.
Anyway. Okay. So this week's episode came from a non-request on Tumblr, and it will consist of us grading every Arrowverse DC TV show on the basis of female relationships, how they develop, women talking to each other and supporting one another. We'll talk about what's working, what's not working, and what we want to see moving forward. And we will be hosted by our lovely May.
Hello, and we also forgot Krypton.
We did not forget Krypton. We just like excluded it. There's not like much there to discuss.
We're constantly sidelining Krypton. I don't know what it did to us.
Yes.
Anyway,
I do have to say that this is a so thank you, Anon, who requested this episode, because we didn't think about this, because the female friendships have not been amazing per se, but you know, women have friendships with each other, and I feel like the superhero world does not portray it very well, because we're either like fighting over boys on TV or never speaking to each other, so it's a little bit ridiculous. But we will start off with Supergirl, who is the shining child in the Arrowverse with regards to female friendships. And these female friendships for the last season were Kara and Alex, Kara and Lena, which will be interesting to talk about, Lena and Sam, and Lena and Alex. So we're going to grade the overall dynamics that they have based on how they've portrayed these female friendships and kind of break down the relationships themselves. So, ladies, what letter grade would you give Supergirl, and why?
Tati, do you want to start?
Okay, so here's the thing. If I'm grading Supergirl against, like, on its own, just grading Supergirl, then I agree with the future grade that I see, which is, like, a B, right? Just, like, just that's, like the objective grade. But if I'm, like, grading it in the Arrowverse, or, like, on a curve, then I think it's an A+, because it is the best one, like you said. I feel like we're supposed to be talking about specifically this season, but I think that it started off super strong, because the core of the show is Alex and Kara's relationship. And of course, Kara is the lead of the show, so it makes sense that those relationships stem from her. And even the fact that her dad was disappeared and she had more of a relationship with her adopted mom, and the fact that they turned, you know, Kal-El wanting to talk to his dad or whatever from Krypton to her contacting, or, you know, having a little hologram of Laura. That's all like, oh, pro-female relationships. And of course, Kat being her mentor. But then that kind of disappeared. Like, Laura and Kat both were chucked away for season two. And Alex and Kara sort of lost its grounding. So, but then we reached season three, where I think it got back a lot of that. It got back on its footing for the most part. Like, obviously, we don't have Kat back, but we have Sam and Lena as the grounding relationship for the season, inexplicably. And Kara and Alex returned to a stronger spot in the narrative, which is good. And of course, Alex did get to be part of the Sam and Lena shenanigans, and even developed her own separate relationship with Ruby. So all of that is really good, and I feel like they found like lots of new and interconnected ways to make different women have different relationships to each other. They even did a little bit of that, not as much as they should have, maybe, if they were introducing Imra at all, but with Imra and Kara. Like, they never became, like, a petty situation where they're trying to fight over Manel, but, like, Imra truly respected and liked Kara. And, you know, in the end was like, okay, well, if you like her, then I guess I'll just fuck off back in the future. See you later. So you know, it was interesting. They made some... mostly positive choices, but then of course there's a couple negative ones, like Kara and Lena kind of just stopped really being friends this season, even though we're being told that they are friends. So the fact that the relationship between Lena and Supergirl is vastly different than the relationship with Lena and Kara this season, which was not the case last season, Lena was like, I like both these girls, both are awesome, that's cool, and yet we saw both a lot. Whereas this season, it's like, Kara is my best friend, and Supergirl sucks. So you think that's when you would see the contrast, but instead, it's just like, we hear about Kara and Lena interacting, and we saw it, like, twice. So I don't know how I feel about that. I think it's a little bit weird. But then again, since Lena took over so much of the show this season, maybe... I don't know. Maybe it would have been confusing to have her and Kara sharing too much screen time. because there's more to say, like racial, like obviously we don't have a racial diversity for the women, so the women are, you know, women of color are treated very unequally or just barely appear at all, so that is why it does not get anything higher than a B, or that's one of the many reasons it doesn't get anything higher than a B in the real world, but since there's nothing to compare it to an Arrowverse, it's still the highest one. Okay.
So, for me, Supergirl is rated L for ladies being friends and supporting each other on everything from love to careers to saving each other when in need. So, like, being in the Arrowverse, like, I totally agree with you that if it was, like, graded on the curve, then it would be, like, an A+, because it's, like, best, I feel, in terms of, like, women supporting women outside of just, like, this is work and we are on like the same work team kind of thing.
Yes.
And like, you know, for sure being the one show in the Arrowverse, like the show that prides itself on girl power, I think it's like for the most part delivers on having like those developed, certainly the most consistent woman relationships. Kara and Alex's relationship has always been like the grinding center to the show for me. Of course, I skipped season one, so I don't know about that. But I also agree with you about, like, Kat Grant and Kara and how, like, pivotal Kat was to Kara's development in season one in that relationship. But I also feel like Kara and Alex's relationship and their sisterhood has also been, like, just the heart of Supergirl. And I liked how in this past season, the Midville episode, they showed how Kara and Alex's bond didn't always start... it didn't start out as strong as it is now. So they kind of showed, you know, that it did kind of start as this, like, fractured relationship where they weren't on the same page. And they grew from that and developed because they had that shared experience with Kara's friend that was killed. I like that they showed that because it showed, like, a lot of... it wasn't just, like, a bond because they were sisters, but it was a bond because... they went through something and they worked on that. So it's kind of like a crucible to their relationship that just made it better and made your understanding of their relationship that much stronger. So I really like that there's a lot of depth there. And then even with Kara's like current female relationships, you know, in this present time, the relationship is almost never centered around a guy, which is unusual for the Arrowverse. The focal point is usually male-centered in a lot of the other shows, mm-hmm. but, you know, you get, like, a lot of those other things. So I like that their friendships are more independent in that sense. Like, you get, you know, Kara and Alex just hanging out. You get Kara and Lena going on, like, lunch dates, talking about, you know, careers, talking about things that don't involve, like, their current love life. And also just... them stepping up and saving each other when they need it. So, for example, in this season with Sam, especially being the one most in need of saving, like the other woman kind of stepped up and rallied around her and her daughter to kind of help her through that. So I do like that. There are some aspects that I think that could be better. Particularly, I think that any female combo that is not Kara and Alex, the show just kind of relies on the concept of girl power and, you know, girls' friendship to explain their bonds rather than
friendship
actually
is magic.
Developing, you know? It's like, it's magic! They're girls and they're friends!
Yeah.
Like, Sam and Lana's friendship, it just made no sense to me because we had never heard of Sam before the start of the season. And I think this actually like a more of a plotting issue because they didn't really conceive of Sam before. They needed Rain and needed a way to introduce Sam. And so they connected Sam to Lena. But Lena had been like consistently saying that she has no friends and she just moved to Central City.
Yeah.
Not Central City, but National City. So just really didn't make any sense, like, how connected she was to Sam. I liked it, but I just had time to believe that this was, like, some kind of, like, deep friendship when we never saw the seeds planted in, like, season two.
Yeah, we should have seen their first meeting in season three, you know, and Sam, right. And Lena could still just be, like, glom onto her, because she doesn't have friends, so she'd be like,
hey, right, exactly. But it wasn't like, I've never had friends. You're a new friend. I want to protect you. It was like, we've been friends for years. I'm like, where were you friends for years? I don't
at least give us flashbacks.
Yeah, exactly. And, or just, you know, not try. You can't say that Lena is alone in the universe, but also that she's had Sam for years. And, you know, it doesn't really connect that way.
I think it's interesting because, if anything, Lena is more connected to the real world than Kara is, because she has a job, she has work, you know, employees, she has friends, apparently, and now she has a relationship, so she's...
it's not even that Lena and Sam developed, like, Sam is, like, the new person that Lena just hired, and she's, like, super smart and really, you know, has initiative and all this kind of stuff, and Lena, like, is attracted to that or whatever. It's nothing like that. So I'm not really sure how they made that jump from Sam being an employee to Sam being Lena's, like, best friend, and therefore she's Kara's best friend. Like, I don't get that jump just based off, like, last season. They kind of, like, jumped to the end without, like, any kind of threads and how that Lena and Sam got to that place. And then again, also for... especially with Alex and Maggie Sanders being, like, a really huge part of Alex's storyline, Maggie and Kara never really developed any kind of bond. They had, like, one episode where they were kind of bumping heads a little bit with each other, and it was, like, resolved in that episode, but it's kind of weird also because the entire time that Maggie has been introduced on the show, she never really seemed to get that close to Kara, which is, you know, considering that Kara is the closest person in Alex's life, it's a little bit weird that the love of Alex's life doesn't really get to know her girlfriend's sister. So
that's,
I thought that was a little
true.
Bit odd.
And also, like, it almost, like, at certain point, it kind of seemed like she resented Alex's, you know, like, dividing time for Kara/Supergirl, but they also didn't really explore it either, so it's not like they made it a negative.
Especially since Kara is the lead of the show, Maggie being Alex's number one, like, if Alex is Kara's number one and Maggie is Alex's number one, Kara should have had a better relationship with Maggie than she had while she was on the show. This past season, Imra was introduced, and Imra and Kara's relationship was basically, like, literally over Mon-El, and they could never really kind of get over that, so there's always kind of, like, a distance between them. Sam was, like, I've said before, like, Sam was best friends, quote-unquote best friends with everybody, depending on which woman the plot deemed to be key to saving her at any particular moment. So, like, when Lena, when she had to be introduced to Lena, like, Lena was her best friend, and then Carl was her best friend, and then, like, Alex was supposed to be, like, the scientific, you know, medical part, that she was her best friend, and the Ruby, and so it's just, like, a little bit ridiculous, like, how are you best friends with, like, all these different people, and we never really see, like, the depth of that relationship. Like, Alex is only connected to Sam through Ruby, and then Carter was only connected to Sam through Lena, and then we don't really know how Sam and Lena were connected, and we were just told that they were connected, so it's just kind of a little bit, you know, whoever needed to save Sam at the moment, that was her best friend. and then another one of, like, a relationship between Rain, Pestilence, and Purity seemed really superficial and really cursory. I feel like the whole evil Powerpuff Girl thing they're trying to do with, like, Rain, Pestilence, and Purity could have started way earlier. They kind of introduced it, Pestilence and Purity, as kind of like afterthoughts, and I feel like if they had developed those two as well as they developed Rain and, like, connected them earlier and had them, like, you know, doing evil stuff as a trio or, like, plotting that while the main story was going on, there could have been a lot more there to contrast them to Kara, Alex, and Lena as, like, the superhero trio. So there was a missed opportunity there that I feel like they really could have delved into Pestilence and Purity more. And I, like, Tasha, like you were saying, because Pestilence and Purity were women of color, and, like, Supergirl doesn't really have a great track record with women of color, that's just another kind of, like, downside to what it could have been, especially, you know, with Rain, Pestilence, Purity, that, like, evil trinity. It was set up as Rain being, like, the main bad guy when it could, you know, like, then why have the trio? You have the trio because it could have been, like, so much more, and they just kind of fell through with that. And, like, the only relationship I feel like that comes close to Kara and Alex is Kara and Lena, but, like you said, Kara and Lena, they totally forgot they were friends this season, which made the whole shift to them being, like, unknowing frenemies with Lena, like, being really suspicious of Supergirl, less angsty than it probably should have been. So, like, all in all, like, I agree with you, like, a B plus is where I sit with Supergirl.
Yeah, I would even say, like, the shift between Lena and Kara started happening after she was ditching work and Lena called her out. And ever since then, I feel like they've never been the same. but I agree. For me, like, no matter what romances Kara is involved with on the show, so probably, like, two so far major ones, the heart of the show remains the bond between Kara and Alex. Like, they're always... they've always been there for each other, and the show has made it a point to have them, you know, sit on the couch in Kara's apartment so they could catch up with each other and talk about emotions and work and stress and all this other stuff that goes on in their lives. And it's one of the only female relationships that feels genuine and like it matters to the narrative. Like, women talk to each other about everything, emotions, they laugh and cry with each other. And so Kara and Alex's relationship has always been good at portraying that better than most female friendships and relationships within DC TV and even within the show. In season 3, I think their relationship, I actually don't think it was as much of a primary focus, at least in the back half of the season. Like, in earlier on, we saw them kind of bonding over their breakups or, you know, Mona leaving and then Maggie leaving. But I think in the back half, because Kara kind of got pulled away from having the story be about her, and so she lost her own grasp on those relationships closest to her. So Alex largely dealt with her feelings about balancing a work life with motherhood with Jean, and Kara didn't really get a chance to discuss Krypton with Alex in any deep way, except for, like, the little minor introduction of her mom.
Yeah, and it's just like, all right, I'm gonna go now.
Yeah.
Right, that was so weird.
Yeah, so, like, in season 4, I hope that the show re-centers that relationship, because it is the most important one, and especially now that Mon-El is finally out of the picture, I'd like to see more consistent, you know, heart-to-hearts and just general sisterly closeness going into next season. For Kara and Lena, it's so tricky, because you're right, their friendship was definitely better in season 2, and the way that they introduced it was cool, you know, Lena wasn't this bad person per se. Like, the only thing we had on her was that she was a Luther, but otherwise they were pretty close. They always had some great solo scenes together. They had great chemistry. The show seemed to prioritize their relationship, only to pretty much screw it up in season 3. Like, I don't like the fact that Kara is still withholding her secret from Lena, and her distrust of Lena has caused somewhat of a tense relationship. So we no longer have sweet moments and the nice camaraderie we used to enjoy, and it's been replaced with nonsense and drama. And I'd like to see more of an evolution in their relationship. Like, how did they get from being great friends to, if they're going to end up being enemies, like, I want to see how that's going to happen, because it'll be more impactful. And I can't imagine that the writers would want to throw out the entire friendship just yet. So we'll see. But yeah, Lena and Sam and Lena and Alex, you're right, Jess, that she kind of just bonded with whoever.
Whoever needed to save her at the moment.
Was going to save her.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good, like, defense mechanism or, like, evolutionary tactic.
To bond with who's going to save you at the moment.
Exactly. That's right.
I totally agree with you, May, about, like, Kara and Lena as far as what I want to see in season 4. Like, I really, like, if we're already going down that route, and I really want to explore, like, the contrast and really to show the contrast, and instead of just, like, telling us that Lena doesn't trust Supergirl, like, I want to see, like, the whole, you know, strain that Kara has going through of, like, trying to, like, still be friends with Lena, but not Lena not, like, having it on the Supergirl side. So that's something that I also want, because I really like that contrast. And I've said this before about Lena. I've always felt this way about Lena, about her being in, like, the gray area. I think it's, like, great, and, you know, it works that she doesn't know that, at least in season 1 and season 2, that, well, I guess in season 2, really, that she didn't know that Supergirl and Kara were the same person. In season 3, it kind of got a little bit ridiculous, but I hope that that kind of goes somewhere into season 4 and kind of builds on that, so we can get this kind of Kara, Lena, you know, Superman, Lex Luthor kind of thing officially, like, off the ground.
Yeah, we don't want superhero girls, Lena. I'm just bad, and that's it. So yeah, I mean, overall, I give Supergirl a B. I think it does benefit from being the only show in the Arrowverse with a woman in the title role and being the lead character. So Kara kind of gets to interact with all the women in general. And having her sibling relationship with Alex be central to the show separates it from the rest of the Arrowverse as well. And, I mean, like you guys said, clearly the show still has a white feminist problem. And Kara hasn't interacted with a woman of color in any major capacity yet, but the fact that she interacts with women for more than 10 seconds a season is leaps and bounds ahead of the other shows. So, a B. Yay, Supergirl.
Like, highest grade that we'll give all episodes.
Right, exactly. you started at the top. Moving into Arrow, so there weren't really that many female friendships this season, if at all. So what did you guys think about that?
Well, yeah, I think that there was a, you know, a dynamic of some kind between Dinah and Laurel, so that definitely happened, and they definitely interacted, although, to be fair, their interactions were about dudes, so, because it was either, like, you killed Vince, or, oh, we both like Quentin, so, but, you know, at least it wasn't some, there was some kind of a complexity there. I don't know. Maybe a little bit. But, aside from that, there's literally, like, Felicity has her friend, Elena, whatever her name is. I don't know.
Like, I hate her, so I always forget about her.
I don't know if they have, like, what the depth of their interactions is, or, like, what the, like, extent of their friendship is. Yeah, like, because she's super, like, she's not even a plot device. Like, they don't even need her for the plot. So they just bring her in sometimes, and they're like, hey, this is Felicity's clone friend. And then she just disappears, and there's no explanation for it whatsoever. So I don't know. Like, I think in previous seasons, before Laurel's untimely demise, there was a cute friendship with Thea and Laurel. And because it had been ingrained in the show since season 1 and, you know, pre-season 1, because they were still close while Ollie was, you know, fake dead, you did get that sense of, like, these are, like, quote-unquote replacement siblings for each other. You know what I mean? Like, they treated each other like they were siblings because they didn't have their actual siblings. So and I really liked that, even though they never really delved that far into it. But, like, there was a time where they lived together, et cetera, all of that. And then since Laurel died, like, they had even tried to bond Laurel and Felicity for a little bit when they were trying to make it, like, no ship fighting here, you know, we're all good. But then once they killed Laurel, it was like they forgot what female friendships look like or what female interaction even looks like. So now this season, aside from talking to Elena, like, twice, I mean, did Dinah and Felicity ever even speak? Like, I don't know if they have, like,
capacity like
not
that.
Directly. Like, I don't think they had, like, one-on-one conversations where they connected at all.
Right. So to have two women on the team and to not even know what kind of relationship they have or what kind of dynamic, you know, what their mutual interests or not are is very strange. And not to get ahead of ourselves, but you can... It's you could compare it negatively even to the Flash's dynamic, weird ass work dynamic that we'll talk about in the future. So anyway, aside from that, like, what else is there? Are there any other women interactions that we could even talk about?
Felicity,
like, how do you grade
Felicity
this? Not available.
Didn't have any either.
I feel like it's, like, incomplete. Like, we give it an incomplete. I mean, obviously it's an F. It's a failure. You have failed. But there's not even enough to grade. It's like they just didn't show up for the test. Mm. But I do again expect that with Beth in charge and with a new makeup of the writer's room, that is going to be different. We've gotten more women coming in to begin with, like, on screen as well. So I think that a lot of them are villains, but I think there's at least one that's going to be good. So I don't know. We'll see. I hope that Dinah gets, like, isn't there a new cop maybe coming? Like, Dinah might get a nice female coworker that she's dressed with.
Isn't, like, the, she's a black woman, right?
Yes, there's two longbow hunters. One's a black woman.
Yeah, there's her. But then isn't there, like, someone else that's supposed to be in the police force?
Yes, there was a casting call for someone in the police force. I think her name was, like, Jessie or Jenny or something like that in the casting call. I don't know if they were cast or not, though.
Okay.
I don't know if, like, we've gotten an announcement for them, but yes, we did get a casting call for that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, hopefully Dinah will then develop work relationships, and then hopefully Felicity will, you know, interact with the other member of her team. And now that Laurel, you know, Laurel's trying to be Laurel, right? She wants to live up to the other, so Earth One Laurel's legacy, maybe she will develop bonds. A different kind of bond.
And I imagine if Felicity's, like, becoming leader, she should start forming those bonds with everyone on the team, especially since Oliver's not around.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully her and Dinah will interact.
For me, Arrow is rated C for competitions over men that ain't shit. So, like, in general, I think Arrow is kind of a mess. Especially in the earlier seasons, and that most of the women-to-women relationships seem to revolve around Oliver in some kind of competition. So, like, Sarah literally cheated with Oliver on Laurel, and that is the first thing that we learned about Laurel and Sarah as sisters, is that, you know, one sister cheated with the other's boyfriend, and that's, like, not
that,
a great thing.
I heard that Sarah cheated on Laurel.
No, Sarah, it's Oliver who cheated on Laurel.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess she did cheat on
property,
Laurel. She cheated on her trust.
Exactly.
That's what happened right there. So, that's not great. Felicity was written, I feel like she kind of felt like she's in competition with both Laurel and Sarah at different points. Like, there's sometimes in the earlier seasons where she felt like she was, like, a little bit jealous of, you know, maybe Laurel's relationship with Oliver, or definitely Sarah's relationship with Oliver when Sarah came in, like, season two, I think. But not to be entirely shady, there were some bright spots in the series, especially with Laurel and Thea's relationship, like Tati mentioned. That was probably, I feel like, one of the most developed from the earlier seasons. And it makes sense because Laurel was supposed to be Oliver's primary love interest. So it made sense that Laurel and Thea had, like, a really good bond. And Thea kind of saw Laurel as an older sister and loved her. And I think after Laurel's death, like, Thea was the one that took it, like, the hardest. Like, she had the most difficulty in coming to grips with Laurel not being there, just because, and that's kind of a testament to how strong their relationship was outside of her brother. Comparatively, I don't feel like Thea and Felicity ever got as close as Laurel and Thea after Felicity took over as the primary love interest, like with, like we were saying with Supergirl, with Maggie, Alex, and Kara, seeing as Maggie was Alex's primary love interest, it would have made sense for Maggie and Kara to have developed, like, a really strong bond. And they didn't. And in the same sense in Arrow, I don't really feel like Thea and Felicity connected in the way that Thea and Laurel did in the earlier season. I feel like once Arrow became clear on where they wanted to go with their main ship, the relationship between Sarah and Felicity, and especially Felicity and Laurel, definitely improved. Like, I feel like Felicity and Laurel, their bond really improved once the Arrow writers wanted to make clear that Felicity was, quote-unquote, the girl.
Right.
Like, this is not a competition, you know. Laurel accepts this, and Felicity accepts this, and then, like, Felicity and Laurel are good, so y'all should be good. Like, that's kind of how it felt like. But their relationship is actually...
No fighting.
Yeah, no fighting. We're okay. So their relationship actually really improved. There's also, like, one tiny moment, like, Sarah and Sin, that was supposed to be, like, a positive relationship that came from the...
I miss him.
Yeah. From the comics that was stolen from Laurel, but it was a positive relationship, but it was, like, really kind of superficial because we never really, you know, got to see what that relationship was or how it developed or, you know, the depth of that relationship at all. It was really superficial in my opinion.
Right.
Laurel and Nyssa, once, like, Sarah died, Laurel and Nyssa started to get really close, and that was a great dynamic, and Nyssa could have been really great for Laurel's story, but they never really explored it. It was, like, massively underutilized, and it was definitely a shame, because they were, like, Katie Cassidy and,
Katrina Law.
Yeah, they had really great chemistry together, and it's just, like, a dynamic that wasn't really explored that well. Yeah. In general, I feel like Arrow seems to place a lot more emphasis on the quote-unquote team dynamic and the quote-unquote Oliver versus someone dynamic rather than wanting to develop anything between, like, especially the ladies outside of that.
Right.
So, like you're saying with Dinah and Felicity, there's no real kind of relationship with them outside of the team. So, like, within OTA and NTA... Dinah, for example, her strongest relationships are with either Diggle initially when they had that kind of thing going on. We had no idea what
the best relationship.
Yeah, but it was a relationship. They had something going on between them. And then when they finally split up with OTA and NTA, it was Dinah and her boys. And, like, Curtis and Renee were, like, the most important things in her life when they formed their own team. And so for Dinah and Felicity, they don't really seem to have, like, this kind of, any kind of bond really outside of, like, what the team is doing. And Dinah in general doesn't really seem like she has any kind of hobbies outside of work. Like, she's just, like, work, she's vigilante, and that's it. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't date.
That takes up a lot of time, okay?
It takes up all of her time. She doesn't do anything outside of that. And neither does Felicity, for that matter. Like, Felicity seems like, and as a character, she would be, like, a girl's girl. And, yes, she hangs out with zero girls.
Right.
You know, you mentioned, like, Elena. But also, like, I feel like, you know, and Emily has mentioned this as well, that Felicity should be, like, calling, hanging out with, getting advice from, like, Iris or even Caitlin. Because I feel like, especially in the earlier seasons or in the crossovers, that Felicity and Caitlin would have some moments. But, you know, It's like only for that. They're cool for the summer, but that's it. They go their separate ways, and no one ever sees like any of them again in the same place. So Felicity or Iris or Felicity or Kaylin or any kind of combination whatsoever. I think she would have loved even hanging out with or having girls' nights with like Earth One Laurel, but it's just never shown. Like they had like this kind of good relationship, and then once Laurel died, we were supposed to believe that Felicity was just like torn up and broken over the fact that Laurel died. And they had a little bit of it, but they never really went into depth about what Laurel and Felicity's relationship would look like. So it's kind of, there's not a lot of like, depth or anything there to anchor that. Diana and E2 Laurel's dynamic is just built off of competition. Like you said, everything from like the Canary title to Quentin to revenge over Laurel killing Diana's boyfriend. And it's just like, you know, they had some hate sex chemistry. That was great.
Yes. But
that, you know, Laurel kind of brought out the worst in Dinah as a character. And it was super disappointing because I was really counting on them being a duo when we first learned that she was coming back in season 5 as a regular. I thought that it would be something where she was trying to, like, reform herself, like, from the beginning. And that she and Dinah would connect and like be a little bit on an antagonistic side to Oliver, and that didn't happen. So I was like really disappointed about that. So I guess like overall for Arrow as a series, I would give it maybe a D. I'm saving my worst grade for the next show. I'm gonna give it a D.
Oh my gosh. I totally forgot to just mention Moira, because I thought she was such an important part of the first two seasons.
Yeah.
And I think that also killing her off was a huge mistake, and B, also greatly deteriorated female dynamics on the show, especially like Moira and Thea had such a complicated dynamic that mm-hmm. getting rid of her also really changed Thea as a character for the worse as well. And that is all.
Yeah, it gave her... It lessened her importance, I guess. And I think it's just detrimental to the show to kill off all of Oliver's family. His mom, then Thea left, and then they killed Laurel. Yes, she was, like, practically family. Like, she was that connection to them, like you guys were saying about Laurel.
And now Quentin is dead.
And now Quentin is dead.
Hate Oliver.
Yep, yep. So Oliver literally only has his team.
And his son.
I guess.
Mother, there's another like connection to Oliver that's just like dying. All your family is dead, Oliver.
Yeah, it's just not a good look. But I do remember Laurel and Thea's relationship early on, and I really liked it too. Like you guys were saying, it really felt very sisterly and kind of. They just had a deeper relationship than Thea has had probably with any other woman on the show, especially in the later seasons, besides Moira. And I really liked Thea and Moira's relationship because it had an intriguing dynamic and, you know, it wasn't all roses and other flowers. But, you know, that they got to interact and... Moira was this... I feel like Moira was even closer to Thea than she was to Oliver, which was great watching it on screen. And then you had Laurel and Sarah, who had an equally interesting dynamic. Like, it wasn't perfect by any means, but they had this sort of understanding that and bond after Sarah came back, you know? And that still is seen to this day. Like, it echoes because Sarah... Like, they would lose each other at different points, and then Sarah would finally be like, oh, I lost my sister, and you can still feel that. You know, I feel like Laurel, despite whatever anybody says, she had a huge impact on the show and the relationships within the show, and once they killed her off, it just... A lot of things died with her. In terms of Laurel and Dinah this season, like, I disliked the majority of this relationship because it was based in a lot of anger. and for a long time, I've just felt like the writers were pitting the Canaries together just to pit them together. It looked like good drama, but after one or two episodes, it just kind of dragged out. And I feel like they could have even had them bonding over Quentin, but they didn't. And then they could have just removed Quentin, because they did remove Quentin, and then they could have had, like, some sense of camaraderie, but they never went there, and I don't know how they're going to do that, if they're going to do that in season 5. I think that season I would like... What was that?
Season 7, not season 5. Season 7,
sorry.
Yes. We all live in the past.
We all live in the past. But for season 7, I'd actually like to see Laurel and Dinah interact as civilians, since Laurel seems to be taking on the role of lawyer and Dinah's a cop. So imagine them both interacting on like a day-to-day basis in and out of the precinct. So yeah, that could be some good stuff that they can mine, you know? But we'll see. Beth, come through. In terms of like Felicity and Thea, I don't have much to say about this relationship, because I feel like it's practically non-existent, which is strange, because especially in season 6, Felicity being Oliver's wife and Thea being Oliver's sister should have established a stronger relationship with more interactions, but they barely looked at each other for most of the season and barely spoke two words. Even when Thea was leaving for good, we kind of had her, you know, talking to Oliver more than Felicity. Yeah, so like the relationships on Arrow just dwindled, the female friendships after Laurel died. I love Laurel Nissa. That was great.
I love them too.
For the 10 seconds they were. Yeah.
But at the very least, I guess at the very least we can say that that Arrow had laid the groundwork for female relationships, even if they petered out or they did not live up to their full potential, etc.
Yeah.
So they started from a place of where they had something to work with, basically.
Yeah, they did.
So I should be like Jessica and revise it to a D, because like it was like D for deterioration. They started off in the right place, and
yes. I'm going to give it a D as well. It made the attempt the first 4 seasons, and there was something there, and then it just D for died. It died.
Yeah. It's not the worst. The worst is coming up.
Yes, now to our fave show, but the worst with female friendships, The Flash. Thoughts?
I feel really bad because I'm like, why are you like this, Flash? You were also the worst for LGBT rep. Like, stop being the worst. But anyway, so yes, that's the true F. Flash. That's why it starts with an F, because it doesn't like women interacting with each other. So, I mean, yeah, there's almost nowhere to start from. To begin with, they only had 2 series regulars who were women, and they did not even consider developing a dynamic between Caitlin and Iris for several seasons. I think like, at some point you could be like, oh, well, they obviously, you know, get along and like each other and respect each other because they're on the same team. And every once in a while, one of them will say something else about the other, like, that person is smart or that person can handle this or, you know, whatever. So you're like, oh, yay. But then it wasn't until after Caitlin's alter ego tried to kill Iris and there was not a particular, like, you know, Iris didn't even have particular feelings about Caitlin trying to kill her. It wasn't like, my friend is trying to kill me. Like, you could have mined a lot out of that if you had developed a relationship. But instead, it was like, this girl I know is, you know, I feel bad for her. She's trying to kill me because she has this slow personality. Oh, well.
They didn't really mine any of that with her male friends. So that just goes to say a lot
so
of things.
Even less. Well, to be fair, she and Cisco had some good moments. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay. She and Cisco. But, but anyway, so after that, they were like, wait a second, maybe we should make them friends. So to their credit, at least they did have that episode where they acknowledged that they were barely even work friends, right? Like, we don't actually know anything about each other and we don't actually interact and we don't actually, you know? So they made an attempt in season 4 to develop a dynamic of some kind between Caitlin and Iris.
They made an attempt up until the wedding, and then they're like, fuck it, we don't need to do this anymore.
they did it because they realized there were no female friends, we don't have to do it anymore.
Right, until at the episode when Iris had seed, and then Caitlin was like, girl power. But yes, like, so they don't, you know, like, we don't ever see them hanging out, and obviously, granted, for many reasons, most people don't want to see them hanging out, including the actress portraying them. So it's, you know, so, you know, it's debatable the reason why we don't get it. But because they were the only two women on the show, it is not good that we didn't. And we didn't get any, like, you know, recurring characters who allow to us to develop more female friendships. I mean, Iris and Felicity counts mm-hmm. on Flash
yeah.
because the other shows don't acknowledge Iris's existence. So Felicity doesn't have Iris as a friend on Arrow outside of that one crossover. But Iris does acknowledge Felicity as a friend. So we did get this, especially this season, we got, you know, both the episodes, first the bachelorette party, and then the actual, you know, post-wedding episode. And Iris got to mention being annoyed at her friend Felicity for interrupting her wedding and then giving her a, what was it, a coffee maker or something that she
yeah.
already
that she,
yes. So that exists. But that's really the only relationship that's like been, and Iris and Cecile are developing, you know, more of a relationship. So that's good. Like now that we have Cecile more often, and now she's going to be a series regular. So hopefully we'll get more of that. And with Nora, we're going to get a very particular dynamic between Iris and Nora. And that as long as, you know, we can assume that since they'll both be around, that we're going to be able to develop that further than we did, say, the antagonistic dynamic between Iris and Francine, or between Caitlin and Carla. Because both of those were like, hello, we do not get along, goodbye. So hopefully with Iris and Nora, we will finally see the, hello, there's a reason that we're not getting along. Oh, this is the reason. Now let's build from that to a better right. relationship. And there isn't even that many other relationships to talk about for, like, you know. So Slash is, you know, doing well in that it actually has women of color. And now it's going... Now it has three black women on its show as series regulars. And, of course, so no one else can say that. So, yay, they have something that's not the, they're not the worst at. But but before this season, and really before the upcoming season, because that's when we're going to see the fruits of our labor, they were planted in season 4, and now hopefully we'll see them blossom in season 5. But before that, it was really only Iris and Linda who had developed a dynamic way back in season 2. And even that had started off poorly, like antagonistically written in season 1. But thankfully, it, you know, they changed that up. They made them, like, they made that friendship, you know, it had such an impact that people still, you know, enjoy it, talk about it, write fanfics about it today, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we still view Linda as one of Iris's best friends, even though Linda has not been around since the first half of season 2. So they just need to, you know, if they write it, if they build it, we will come. So
yeah.
That's all.
The Flash is rated F for fuck female friendships, am I right? like, it's slowly improving with the addition of Cecile and now Nora, but I think it's probably the worst in terms of developing healthy women relationships or even just, like, women in general. I feel like even with Iris and Caitlin, as far as their individual storylines, every single plot that a woman, whether it's Iris, Caitlin, or a villain of the week, has been revolving around a man every single time. And the only exception to that is maybe this season with Aminette, since she revolved around Caitlin. And, like, that's like, sad. It's really, really sad that all of the women in The Flash are introduced with the purpose of being connected to a guy. And especially, I think, with Caitlin, like, season 2, when, you know, it was Caitlin with Ryan season 1, and season 2, she's only connected to Jay, our Hunter Zolomon, to introduce him, and not about her. And so that was just, like, that's not even, like, a female-female relationship. That's just, like, women in general. Like, The Flash is just, like, kind of really bad about that. They're starting to get better, I think, as, you know, the seasons go on. But in the beginning, it was definitely just, like, really tragic. Iris and Caitlin should not be as, you know, forgive the pun, they should not be as cold as they are four seasons into the show. Like, we shouldn't have to, like, bulldoze through years worth of development between them just to get to the place where the writers want to force a universe in which, unironically, Iris asked Caitlin to be her maid of honor. Like, this shouldn't be happening. From season one, it made sense that Caitlin was cold, you know, in general, because that's just her personality. Like, you, she's cold, and then you meet her, and then she thaws out, and then she's fine. But, and that's what should have happened with Iris, I feel like, especially since Iris came to visit Barry every day, and she doesn't really have that same kind of relationship with Cisco. Like, they seem to have, they're not, like, best friends or whatever, but they seem to have a kind of rapport, and she doesn't have that with Caitlin, and it's because the writers didn't write it that way, because they were, as well as Danielle, fixated on her being the early only girl in Star Labs, and that being a thing. While I think that a lot of the fault in the fact that Iris and Caitlin don't have a name dynamic may have to do with, like, the behind-the-scenes drama with the actresses, I also feel like the writers share a lot of that blame and not writing, and like, and it could be, you know, Andrew Kreisberg is, like, the easiest person to blame, but in, like, creating that dynamic within the writer's room and the cast, that this was a combative thing instead of something that could have been, like, grown and developed. So, yeah. They only really talked when it was about Barry. You know, whether it be about, is Barry lying to me, Caitlin? I think I might have feelings for Barry, Caitlin. It was only, they only talked about Barry, pretty much. There's never any sense that they hung out outside of the guys, that she called up, that Iris called up Caitlin to, you know, go shopping or, you know, whatever. Or that Caitlin talked to Iris about her, you know, situation with Ronnie or, you know, something. There's never any of that. So it just felt really forced in season four when they wanted to get them to a place where, you know, Iris would ask Caitlin to be her maid of honor. Yeah.
That was the most bullshit moment to ever bullshit on this show.
Say what now?
I said that was the most bullshit moment to ever bullshit.
It really was. It really was. There's nothing kind of earned there. I feel like of all of her relationships in the earlier seasons, Iris and Linda had the potential to be great. But then the writers, especially when she was first introduced and Iris first started working at Central City Citizen. No, Central City... CCPN. And they had the potential to be great, but then the writers stole Linda, like they stole pretty much all of Iris' storylines in season one, and gave her to Barry. So, like, Linda was stolen and given to Barry. Iris' plotline with Reverse Flash was stolen and given to Barry. So I feel like all of that was, you know, it's kind of like the same thing. And they tried to course correct a little bit in season two, but I guess, you know, writing two women as friends was too hard, so they shipped Linda off, and we never saw her again. So, I, you know, this kind of like a wasted opportunity. Cynthia was brought in specifically for Cisco, so, and they didn't even try with her. Like, you know, none of her scenes are talking with either Caitlin, which is Cisco's best friend, or Iris individually. Like, she always talks through Cisco. So she's coming to meet Cisco, or she's already with Cisco, and she's talking to Cisco, and Caitlin might be in the room, but they don't really have a conversation or connection with each other. She doesn't have a connection with Iris. She doesn't talk to any women on the show or anybody, really, except for Cisco. And I think that's really, you know, that was, and especially with that season ending with her and Cisco breaking up and her never having had any relationships outside of him, I thought was, like, kind of tragic, to be honest. Especially, particularly, like, Cynthia was even almost like an antagonist to Iris, specifically in season three, over Abracadabra and his arrest, and whether he should be taken back to Earth 19, or with the information that he had, she would, like, let him go or whatever. She had that conversation with Joe, who is Iris's father, and obviously he's upset and all that kind of stuff, but she didn't have that conversation with Iris. And I feel like Iris, like, is her life on the line. That could have been a really good, like, strong conversation between the two women who are affected by Abracadabra's actions the most, and we didn't get to see that. Yeah, so it's kind of like, it feels like Cynthia was almost like just a booty call for Cisco and nothing else, which is kind of offensive to me. Some things that the Flash did do right, I feel like Cecile, even though she was only introduced initially as love interest to Joe, she provided a much needed mother-daughter bond to course correct from the whole fiasco that they did with the Francine storyline and Iris and Francine. I feel like the more that she sticks around, they kind of are starting to slowly move away from using Joe as a focal point between Cecile and Iris, which is really great. Cecile has a nice relationship with Caitlin. I think that they have, like, a nice kind of relationship with, like, yes. Cecile and her psychic abilities and kind of getting into Caitlin's mind and kind of kicking start that whole thing about Caitlin's storyline with her father and her brother and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So even Cecile and Joni was the first example of a positive female mother-daughter relationship, mm-hmm. I think, on the show, too.
Exactly. So I feel like all of that is really positive. I feel like, weirdly, The Flash really showed this season with their, like, female-female relationships is, like, much better with their hero-villain female relationships. So, for example, I don't know how this happened, but Iris and Killer Frost is, like, 20 times more interesting than Iris and Caitlin. I don't understand.
Yes!
Like, why? But it is, and I kind of wish they had explored that more. Because
I can't believe I forgot the villain side of it, but yes, continue.
Yeah, yeah, but they had, like, a more interesting dynamic than Iris and Caitlin ever had in four seasons, which is crazy. Caitlin and Minette is another relationship that I don't really quite understand, but it works in, like, a white feminist sort of way. Like, and Minette is kind of a mentor to Caitlin. And her interest in Caitlin, whether she wanted to admit it or not, was more than just her self-interest and Killer Frost's abilities. Like, she actually cared about Caitlin as a person and not just Killer Frost as, like, her hired help kind of thing. Killer Frost wasn't the only thing that she cared about, which was, like, you know, kind of good to see someone being in Caitlin's corner in that respect.
Iris and Marlies. Mm-hmm. It's the greatest ship.
And Marlies is the best ship ever. Going back, I feel like Aminette was, like, Caitlin's evil fairy godmother, pretty much, in her strongest relationship, even above, like, her own the relationship with her mother. And then, of course, like, Iris and Marlies is, like, the bomb.com. And probably, like, my favorite dynamic of, like, this series, female relationship-wise. And I don't know if that's just, like, Candace and Kim's chemistry or the writing or a combination of the two. Like, the whole setup of season four with Marlies and Iris' contrasting opposites was really fascinating. And even though their fiction was based off of, you know, a standoff between who loved their husband the most, it never felt like their rivalry was centered around a man, if that makes sense. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it was more like, yes, woman versus woman. And the fact that, you know, Iris was, you know, the person that redeemed Marlies in the end kind of strengthened their bond. And I really, really hope, like, even more, I think probably even more so than Iris and Linda, because Linda's kind of a long shot at this point, but I really hope that the writers actually liked Marlies enough to come to bring her back and write her back into the script so you can, like, consult or do something, because I think that she and Iris just have, like, something special, and it's only between them, and I really like it.
I think it's actually why they didn't kill her, to be honest, because they would bring her back at some point.
Yeah, exactly. I hope that's a thing.
And fingers crossed.
Yeah, I feel like it is on Candace and Kim, because they just have kind of something, and I hope that it comes back, so... Like, they're so powerful. yeah, but definitely Flash is an F. Maybe an F+. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, I don't want to make it, like, at least they're trying to build something. Like, they're trying to build towards it now. Effort.
Yeah.
Like, the reverse of like arrow.
A failure. Like, you know, they get, like, an E for effort.
yeah. I do think it's sad that it's, I mean... For, in terms of, like, Iris and Caitlin, I think that the first two seasons especially, they had that chance to make it something. But then come season three, everyone was kind of over it, especially what happened, you know? And I feel like even, was it like 1-9 when they first truly interacted, where like Iris was asking her why Barry was acting weird and Caitlin told her she should talk to him. So there was a potential there. There was that moment to progress the friendship, to progress them into friendship territory. And like they could have chatted about other things, like had a coffee date, but you know, nope, nothing came out of it. And then the next time they interact was like one
That's
night.
True. Like Caitlin has coffee dates with everybody.
Yes. You know, it's weird, especially in like the first couple of seasons. So like the next time they truly interact was like 119. And I just remember thinking why the writers didn't make this friendship happen in season one. And it's because they'd rather see women having it out over Barry or being distant, because both could only be friends with Barry on, you know, separately and never get to know each other. So it's all bullshit. But then season two could have been a good start where they failed in season one, because they were both grieving over significant others. But Caitlin all but forgot about Ronnie, and we never got to see Iris grieve Eddie until much later. So that was a missed opportunity for them to bond. And then fast forward to season four, after all the shit that happened in season three, and I was way over the idea of them being friends. Like, I would have preferred anyone else, because Caitlin isn't a good friend, period. And then they also don't have good chemistry. Like, they have, like we always say, like, they have a negative chemistry when they do scenes together. So season four started off rocky with them, because you had Caitlin, who very well knew the team was, you know, struggling and knew Barry was in the Speed Force, but then she had that little tiff with Iris over them trying to get him out. And then in Girls Night Out, they had the whole hashtag feminism, but that was shot to hell, because you had Iris trying to help Caitlin, and then Caitlin was the one calling into question their friendship. Like, no. And someone who was, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to bring this up, but someone who's complicit in your almost murder the year before and then abandons a team has no right to act like you're not really friends and more like coworkers. So it was making Iris kind of bend over to try to help Caitlin when she's never really returned the favors. So that's why I'm kind of over them not being friends. And then asking her to be maid of honor was a joke. It just looked really bad. And then, like, once, and then there was also the opportunity in the back half of season four where, like, Iris was trying to help Caitlin try to get Killer Frost back, but then she was all like, I'll do this by myself, so there was no development there. And then, basically, their friendship is as cold as Killer Frost's icicle at this point, and there's no way that it would play out on screen as being believable. That is all. The end. Yeah, so, like, please don't attempt this friendship. I don't want to see it. I'd much rather have Iris interact with any other woman besides Caitlin in that capacity, because it's just not genuine. That ship has sailed. In terms of Iris and Marlies, I love them so much, and I like that they started off as having an antagonistic relationship. Like, they're enemies, but then they became sort of friends. And both of them being married and being protective of their husbands was initially their primary commonality, but then it evolved into finding common ground in other ways, like helping the citizens of Central City. And their relationship got to develop way more than Barry and Clifford's ever did, which was great. And it also really helped that Kim and Candace, like you said, had great chemistry in their scenes together. And I do hope that she comes back, because then they can get that chance to develop their friendship better and, you know, have it be more fully fleshed out on screen. Plus, it's just a nice chance to have two women interact on screen, especially for Iris, outside of, like, family members who, like, Cecile and now Nora. Caitlin Amunet is interesting. It's a fascinating relationship for sure, and I think that Amunet being a pretty villainous woman, and then you have Caitlin going to her for help, knowing that she was a metahuman trafficker. It's fascinating how that developed, and I wonder if half the reason Amunet never really tried to kill Caitlin is because she saw her as someone she could mentor into the business. But I don't really know, because the show never delved into the relationship much, besides using, I feel like they kind of used Caitlin to essentially introduce Amunet, and then they only gave brief glimpses into the type of relationship that they had. So, like, the only thing we got out of this was that Amunet was fond of Caitlin, and Caitlin, to me, was largely indifferent to her. But I did find it interesting that Caitlin listened to her above everyone, like everyone, Cisco, the rest of the team, she listened to Amunet, which was fascinating. And I feel like it means she respected and trusted her more so than she did everybody else. But moving forward, I don't want to see Amunet again, so it's fine.
I was going to say, one of the good things is that Marlise was definitely one of the more popular elements of season four. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah. even in the Comic-Con, you know, at the panel, people asked about, or, like, Leanne had brought up bringing back Amunet. Not Amunet. Bringing back Marlise. Mm-hmm. And no one's asking about bringing back Amunet. That's what I meant to say. Like, people are consistently asking about Marlise and, like, if we can see that dynamic again.
Good.
So,
I love that. Please, like, manifest that into the universe and yes. make it happen.
Yes. Iris and Cecile, I wanted them to develop more into a mother-daughter territory. I feel like we saw glimpses of it, but I do feel like Cecile seems protective of Iris, and they seem to have, like, an easygoing and comfortable relationship, and I feel like that's in part due to Candace and Danny getting along so well off screen. But right now, they haven't shared enough between the two of them. But like you guys said, now that Cecile's like a regular and her relationship with Joe isn't the primary thing for her, like she's branching out, there's definitely room for improvement with Iris. And now that Nora is on the show as well, they can have like mother-daughter chats.
Motherly advice.
Yeah, and like Cecile's like a new mother at an older age, and then Iris is a new mother at a young age who hasn't had actual kids yet, but she has a daughter coming from the future. So they can like bond in that kind of way, and I feel like there's a lot of potential there for like those types of moments, because it's what we deserve. They're a family now.
Yeah, I feel like, and I got an ask about this on Tumblr with Iris and Nora and where that relationship is going, and I feel like, you know, the whole crux of their tension is over the fact that Barry's appeared in 2024, and since he has appeared, Central City became very, like, anti-metahuman or whatever, and, you know, Iris being a mother and losing, like, the love of her life, and, like, the only thing that she has left is her, you know, daughter with Barry, that she'd be very protective of, you know, you can't use your powers, you can't do this. And then Nora is like, you know, I have this ability to do something and I want to do something. She's very much like her father in that respect, that she wants to help and do good and use her powers. And, you know, mom just doesn't understand because she doesn't have any powers. And, you know, if I could fix something, then I should be able to do it. And my mom is like, no. And so I feel like once, and it shouldn't take that long of, you know, that many episodes, but maybe one or two episodes where she's like, you know, this is what happened. This is why we're fighting. And then the fact that Iris is so, like, gung-ho about getting to know her daughter, protecting her daughter, I feel like that's a relationship that could just really, like, blossom in season five. And I feel like, you know, the whole reason, like, this tension is happening is to compare it, contrast it to Iris and Francine's relationship, and for them to, like, kind of grow from there. So I don't see them having, like, an antagonistic relationship for half a season. Oh, maybe, like, an episode or two. And, like, maybe Nora is a little bit, like, cautious or reserved as far as, like, you know, opening all the way up to her mom initially. But I don't see her, you know, I don't see that dragging out for a long period of time, because it just doesn't make sense. Like, yeah. the whole yeah. crux of their situation that
right.
they could be resolved, like, immediately.
Yeah. yeah, and the fact that it's being explicitly compared to Iris and Francine is a good right. sign that they've been reflecting on that dynamic
yes.
and how they can evolve from it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I feel like now that, because Iris is still ever the optimist at this stage in her life, you know, maybe she'll come with a different perspective for Nora as to why her future self was, you know, being more protective of her or whatever, especially if she knows what's going to happen, because I feel like she's going to tell them by the end of the first or second episode.
Right.
And Barry will back her up. Like, Barry will back Iris up and mm-hmm. be like, you need to, like, your mom was right.
He's like, you are
I still low-key want present Iris to be like, your mom was wrong. We are going to save Barry.
She probably would
past.
After
right.
everything has happened.
Whereas Iris would be like, you know, future Iris is full of shit. We're going to save, like, Barry, like, right now. And Barry would be like, you know, your mom was right in the future that you should not come back and save me. But
they'll switch places from their season three thoughts.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. They're like, after all of this shit, I'm sorry. Screw the future.
Exactly. It hasn't happened yet, okay? It's fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to be a little kinder. I'm give it a D minus because they have been making an effort. They have two more series regulars on the show who are women of color. Yay.
Yay!
So hopefully in the future you it'll improve, it, and next year we can give them a C.
Yes!
Moving into Legends of Tomorrow, what do we think about those female friendships and how they've evolved, and what letter grade would you give it?
Well, it's a little hard because I think Legends is, you know, they have several women, which is great. They in the start, like the first season, they only had Sarah and I've already forgotten her name. Kendra. So Sarah and Kendra. And
Kendra.
Yes. Attempts were made. Like they tried to make that like a little bit of a friendship, but they didn't, it was very superficial. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's but then in season two, we brought on Amaya, and again, like attempts were made at a Sarah Amaya friendship, and like they had cute moments, but there wasn't really like a specific like this is the Sarah Amaya dynamic, you know. But I would say that the like strongest relationship in season two was actually Sarah and her feelings about Laurel after Laurel's death, which actually played an important role in the season, as opposed to an Arrow. Like Sarah never got to come on Arrow really and talk about it or anything, you know. But it did affect a lot of her actions and choices in season two of Legends. And we even got like that little like fantasy sequence or mind sequence. I don't remember what, you know, whatever, when she was going to defeat the Legion of Doom with like spiritual help from Laurel. But Amaya and Sarah, like, you know, we did get some cute moments between them, and that then carried over into season three with the addition of Zari. So now we got to have two different kinds of relationships, like between Zari and Amaya, like being like some more like the cuter, like, no, like more strictly positive relationship, I would say, versus Zari and Sarah, who got to clash on like leadership choices or like how they want to, you know, use time travel, etc., which ended up creating like an interesting dynamic that hopefully will be explored more next season, which is like, you know, this is what I did when my sister died, and this is how, you know, I did or did not change time to save my sister versus saving Zari's brother, because that's still hanging and something that could develop the Zari and Sarah friendship more. And then of course we have the addition of Ava in season three, that she doesn't really interact with the other women. She only interacts with Sarah because she's Sarah's love interest. But, you know, she and Sarah did have that arc that was like from, you know, enemies to friends to lovers now. Which is a pretty like, you know, a pretty like by the numbers trope. But they didn't shy away from it, like it being two women, they didn't treat it differently than if it had been a woman and a man. So that's a good thing, but we don't really have a barometer, I guess, or whatever, a measurement for Ava interacting with women on a platonic level. Like, we don't know what friendships with her or enemyships with her are going to be like. So hopefully we'll have the opportunity to find out next season, because she's going to be a regular, and her relationship with Sarah is going to lead to more Time Bureau and Wave Rider shenanigans. Hopefully. And hopefully that's the idea. We're also going to get, you know, next season will be interesting because I assume we're going to have the imprint of Amaya's friendships with Sarah and Zari then affecting or shifting their new dynamic with Charlie. So that'll be even more complicated. And we'll have Alaska. So there's going to be a shit ton of women next season. Yay. I think it's going to be like... I think it might be the first time that there's more women on the Wave Rider than men, but I don't... Is Gary still going to be there? Or maybe not. Maybe I'm lying.
Gary's going to be around.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be a permanent fixture, though, on the Wave Rider.
Okay. So Sarah, Charlie, Zari, Alaska, and Ava. So it'll be five women. And then men is...
Nate, Ray.
Mick.
Ray.
Yeah, Nate, Ray, Mick.
And Constantine.
And is that it? Because that'll be five women and four men. So
yeah, I think so.
But I think like Carrie will probably show up whenever Ava shows up.
Right.
It could be half.
Yeah, it'll probably end up being more half and half. But for now, it's like there will be more women than men, which will be interesting. But basically, the main thing for me is that I think that it's cool that Legends has been slowly building up, more women in its cast and creating dynamics between them. But so far, they're kind of superficial dynamics, I would say. Like, it's not like you don't really get in depth with those relationships. And that's what I'm hoping that we're going to get more of next season. The most in-depth one would probably be Sarah and Ava right now because it's a romantic relationship as well. So, platonic bonds, in addition to that, are what I want to see.
Legends rated B for best girl team ups, but that's it.
Yes.
I think, like, of all the shows not named Supergirl, Legends has the most woman-react interactions. So you have Sarah, Amaya, and Zari. They all seem to have, like, a strong bond and respect as teammates. But one of the, not really more than that. One of the things that I do like about Legends is that they constantly change up the pairings in the episodes so that you do get to see more of the dynamics between the characters. But, like, a lot of those dynamics are, of those dynamic pairings, there's not a lot of women-women dynamics. Because the girls usually get paired up with the guy. I do like that Sarah personally went to convince, I think it was this past season, she went to personally convince Amaya to come back to the team. And I like that a lot. I love that Amaya was really patient in trying to break down Zari's barriers and her walls when they first went to get her. And she joined the team. And then you had this really, like, nice Amaya and Zari dynamic. And they shared the totems in common. So that was really great. But, they have this, like, really special connection. And we didn't really dive into that. Like, I wish we had seen a lot more of that connection through their totems. And the fact that Zari is pretty much the reason why Amaya decided to stay on the Wave Rider instead of, like, going back to 1942 after Sarah recruited her again. Zari having the totem and, like, her ancestor telling her that you need to, like, be, like, a mentor and protect this person was a reason that Amaya stayed on. And then that kind of bond between them and the totems that they share in common, they didn't really develop that further, and I wish they had, because I really like their dynamic together. I feel like the writers were so tied up in Amaya and Nate and that relationship and that storyline and that kind of, like, I need to go back home, I love this person, star-crossed lovers storyline or whatever, was just a little bit wasted with Amaya. She could have been doing, like, other things that would have been, like, more interesting than that. So she kind of suffered a little, and Amari suffered. Like, Amaya and Zari, which they call Amari, they suffered as well. As far as, like, Zari and Sarah, I love that they had tension, and I love the whole, like, concept around that, and it wasn't, like, an easy friendship. They didn't just, like, fall into this, but it was, like, it didn't really go outside of that one episode around the Groundhog's Day, so they kind of ratcheted up the tension between Zari and Sarah, and, like, that kind of, like, butting heads just for that one episode. And they kind of resolved it at the end of the episode, but they didn't really go further or develop it after that episode. And so I feel like that was another, like, lost kind of opportunity because they're pulling characters in different directions and the pairings never really matched up with ladies that well. So you know, like I said, a love that they switch up the pairings and, you know, do these like duos and trios and all that kind of stuff in different episodes. But so many of the pairings are split between the girls and the guys. So it's like Zari and Ray, or Maya and Nate, or Sarah and Mick, whoever. But it's not really, you know, Sarah and Zari going out on, you know, a mission together, or Amaya and Zari going out on a mission together. It's kind of like split, you know, men and women. And it's like, sometimes it's okay to have like women and just like going on missions together and relationships. Like, they don't shy away from that. Because like they do have like this respect amongst each other that you kind of sense that that camaraderie, but they don't really hang out with one each other on like one-on-ones very often. So it's kind of like a little bit of a deficit there as far as like female relationships. Yeah. The season finale, I think, was like the most connected that we've seen Sarah, Amaya, and Zari as a trio, with all three ladies together when they were saying their goodbyes to Amaya. And I feel like all three actresses, like Katie, Maisie, and Tala, have great chemistry together. And their characters, like, respect each other, they love each other, but I'd like to see them play more off of each other. And then coming up in next season, the Amaya that we have is not the Amaya that we know. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects the relationships among the cast. And I hope that it's not just, they don't just focus on Nate's reaction to the woman that he loves that's like not the woman that he loves. I hope that they kind of spend some time focusing on, like, you know, Alaska and Zari, or Alaska and Sarah, or even Alaska. So there's a lot more that they could do, I think, as far as like pairing up the girls with each other and not just like, you know, just going that one step beyond splitting up people in different groups. Like, put some girls together and have them kind of like react off each other more. And then again, Ava, when she's now coming in as a series regular, there's more opportunities for her, especially since Sarah is the lead and Sarah's supposed to be like the primary character. And with Ava being her love interest, we should get some more interactions with Ava and the rest of the group, particularly the girls. So I guess like my final grade for Legends is probably like a C. In the middle. It's right in the middle. Like, the Legends love to do. They love to be mediocre.
The accuracy. Yeah, I mean, I would give it a C+. On the surface, it seems like Legends has more female interaction, and they do, but at least in comparison to like all the other Arrowverse show except Supergirl. But like, upon further inspection, it becomes clear that the female friendships aren't as deep as we'd want them to be. Like, they work as a team, but the development of their friendships isn't consistent. So, like, Zari and Sarah had this contentious relationship, but we never get to see it fleshed out after that one Groundhog, like you were saying, the Groundhog episode. And then Zari and Amaya were both totem bearers, but that was only slightly explored in the first half of season 3 before kind of being abandoned completely. So, like, why not have them really bond over that? We could have even gotten to know Zari and Amaya better if they'd done that. And, like, currently Sarah and Ava are the only major female relationship they've been exploring that's a little bit more deep. They have more moments one-on-one, but that's also because it's a romantic relationship that started off in the hate territory before turning into love. So it's not... like you guys said, there's a lot of girl power stuff, a lot of like great interactions, a lot of good team stuff, but I'd like to see more of like female friendship, females hanging out. And just, I feel like in the future, in season 4, they should just abandon the girls somewhere in time and just like have them chill together.
Girls night. Wasn't there something, I don't know if I'm like misremembering this or whatever, but there's an episode where the guys, maybe it was Hell of Troy, where the guys were just completely useless, mm-hmm. and it was, like, the girls that had to, like, rally up and be, like, the primary heroes for the episode. And that was great, but that was great for that one episode.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's it.
Yeah. So, like, they have a lot of females, and that's amazing, and I just need more of that, like, bonding type relationships. More of the Helen and Troy, because I think that was their best episode in terms of, like, putting women at the forefront, which was great. So, yeah, C-plus legends. You have a lot of women.
Since.
Raise it up.
Use them together.
Yes.
since I forgot Nora in the list of series regular, so then it's, like, six women. Yeah. I will say that I do hope, because, like, so far we've only been introduced to Nora through her father and Ray, you know? So now I would like to, at the very least, like, because Sarah, you know, as kind of the leader of the group and kind of like the nagging mom kind of the group, I want to see her kind of like maybe start off, you know, like maybe like suspicious of Nora, and then like Nora can be like, you know, because like Nora's going to be suspicious of Ray of like, how can anyone be that good? But like with Sarah, I think it'd be fun to sort of like see them kind of like sort of like circle each other for a little bit before they begin to trust each other and then develop a bond, you know? And then
Nora wins is the most used name in the Arrowverse. Like, I don't.
Yes, that's so true.
Nora and Charlie, because I feel like that could be like a duo. Ooh. With
her and like a Charlie. trickster duo situation going on. And let me, you know, not forget that Zari is also kind of, you know, like Zari and Ray developed a friendship where it's like Ray is kind of like the little sunshine, and Zari is kind of like the clouds. So maybe Zari and Nora may have to be like, what's happening here? But yeah, but in a good way. I mean, not in a like fighting over Ray kind of way. Just like, because she is connected to Ray, she will then transfer transitive property. She will also become connected to Nora and vice versa.
So I guess C++ for Legends having the most female series regulars.
Yeah, right. And the most potential for different dynamics next season. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving into our final DC TV show, which is not in the Arrowverse, but still counts.
CW verse.
Black Lightning, which I think has a lot of interesting female dynamics on the show. So how do you feel about those dynamics, and what letter grade do you give the show overall?
I feel like Black Lightning has the depth that Legends lacks. So like Legends has like the most women and the most, you know, potential dynamics or like inklings of dynamics, but because Black Lightning is a show about family, and three members of that family are women, who all have like extensive, you know, interactions and dynamics with each other, that actually winds up giving them the most depth. The only issue, well, before we talk about the issue, I'll just say, you know, I think it's really great that we get to see the parallel, you know, parallel structure of Jennifer and Anissa, how they grow into their powers and how they interact with each other over having powers. And we get to see the moments where they are like, you know, sister squabbles, but also the moments where they support each other and they bond as real siblings do. And then, of course, we get to see Lynn being a truly, you know, like a supportive mother and like the wise and caring mother, but also there are those moments of friction where her daughters don't understand where she's coming from or where she doesn't understand how to convey her feelings to her daughters. The flip side of that is that because I think Black Lightning in season one focused a lot first on family and then on heroic journeys, right? Journey to becoming a hero or to going back to being a hero. There wasn't much of lives outside of that. So there aren't very many women in the Pierce ladies' lives that aren't each other, right? I don't know that we know, like, if Lynn has other friends, really. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we've seen her at work a couple times, and there's, like, some dude at work she talked to. But, like, other than that, we don't really get to see her, like, you know, connecting in any particular way with anyone. Like, the only other woman that I think she really could have connected with in some way was Miss Foudy, and Miss Foudy was just kind of, like, thirsty for Jefferson, and
Shane
Foudy. Exactly. And not interested in meeting Lynn at all. So, and then Anissa, of course, had her girlfriend Chenoa, and then the potential of Grace. But both, you know, since both were romantic options, and both disappeared after, like, episode three, after that, we did not really get a sense of how Anissa interacts with other women. And then Jennifer had her friend Keisha. So Jennifer and Keisha is probably, like,
the best.
Yeah, the best slash biggest non-familial female relationship. But it's interesting because, like, Keisha is Inspector Henderson's daughter, but I couldn't really tell you anything about their relationship. I don't know if they even interacted
on screen. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, when she was introduced, like, or when they brought her up, you know, in, like, the casting call and then in the, like, in the materials outside the show, they said that she was the daughter of...
They never bring that up on the show, though, do they?
Right. Because I can't remember. Right, I don't think they ever brought it up. So, like, I was expecting the whole season, expecting for something to come up that, like, her being his daughter would, like, affect the plot in some way. But, yeah, like, now I don't know if that's even true anymore. It was true when the show was beginning. Like, that was... So that's something that you could mine, like, you know, because if Henderson and Black Lightning have, you know, a situation going on, and then it's going to affect Jennifer because she knows what's up, but Keisha wouldn't know what's up. So, you know, I'm looking for that next season. I hope that happens. If she's not his daughter anymore, make her his daughter again. What is happening there? But yeah, so, so yeah, it's really strong family bonds, but we just need to branch out, more, outside of that. I would give it a B, like give it above Legends, but below Supergirl. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't really have like a Black Lightning as rated grade for it.
How dare you?
I know. Failed. I like fell off at failed the very last minute. I guess Black Lightning is rated F for the family ties that bond. I mean, it only has one season under its belt, so it's a little difficult. It's a little bit different than the other shows in that there's only, like, there's not that much to grade on, like, development-wise. But, like you said, like, most of the relationships on the show are family. So you have sister, or mother-daughter. And, of course, those by nature are going to be more developed than, you know, other relationships, especially when that's, like, 80% of the show. I will say that season one favorite Anissa for most of the season. So her relationship with Lynn is probably like the strongest maybe in the season. Just with, I think, Lynn's acceptance of Anissa as far as like her sexuality, as far as like her not wanting to come out as with her superpowers, as being a superhero, that kind of thing. Like a lot of Lynn's patience was directed towards her eldest daughter. So you saw a lot of their relationship. I think that, you know, Lynn in general, she's kind of a strict parent, but she's understanding. And so, like, a lot of, you know, she plays off of, like, the good cop, bad cop of Jefferson a lot as far as her daughters are concerned. So like she doesn't like push her daughters into telling her the truth, but because she doesn't push, they're more likely to tell her anything that's going on in their lives. And it seems like they trust her more with their personal secrets before they trust their father. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I love that she's so connected to them, even though like her and Jefferson have problems, like she is always connected to her daughters. And that's like something that's a constant in her life and a constant in the series. I think overall as a series that Jennifer seems to be the more neglected, just not just in her relationships with her mother and her sister, but also just like in her family in general. Because they, you know, being like the baby sister, they don't think that she can handle things. And it's just kind of, she's, you know, left out of a lot of stuff. But I think that her relationship with Keisha is really important. And I like that they have that thorough line between the pilot and the end of the series, that Keisha's just kind of been like Jennifer's constant in the way that Lynn was Anissa's constant. In the pilot, you see them like kind of like kikiing together and being like, you know, each other's person kind of thing, even if they're doing like something that was maybe not, you know, on the up and up as far as like sneaking out with parties or whatever. Keisha had Jennifer's back and she was the only person, I feel like, that had Jennifer's back the entire season, which is really important, I feel like, for Jennifer's development and her growth. It was nice to see someone in her corner, and only in her corner. So I really like that. I feel like I agree with Tati that, and this is Love Life, seemed to be the only kind of sour spot in terms of female dynamics, in the sense that we only really get to see Anissa with women outside of her family, and in terms of a romantic sense, first of all. And then second of all, the whole, I'm still like a little bit sour over the whole Chinua Grace dynamic, in the sense that it really didn't have to go down the way that it went down. I feel like there was like a waste of a character to introduce Chinua and have her be, you know, discarded almost immediately when they weren't going to pull the trigger on Thunder Grace and develop that relationship either in the first season. So I guess like in the second season, that I would hope to see not just more of development of Anissa and Grace and their friendship, but we know that she's going to get, Anissa's going to get a new love interest in season two, and it's not necessarily going to be Grace, because I feel like that's probably going to be a new love interest. So the development of that, I'm interested in seeing. But also just in general, like probably more women interacting with women in general. So Anissa and a friend, Jennifer and a friend not named Keisha, Lynn and anybody, you know, that kind of thing. The development between Anissa and Grace, obviously, since I'm not sure that they'll pull the trigger on that immediately. I would like to see more of maybe Grace, and hopefully, I feel like Grace started the blog about Anissa being a superhero, so a little bit more of in-depth into that kind of dynamic. I would really like to see that. So I guess overall, I would be a little bit more pessimistic than Tati and give it like a C+, like right under that B, like a little less than a B, but not exactly a C. So a C+.
All right. I mean, I agree with a lot of what you guys said, and I feel like Black Lightning really does do a better job overall of developing female relationships, but it also helps, like you said, that all the women who interact on the show right now are also related, so it would be weird if they just avoided each other. Lynn is hands down the best mom in DCTV right now, and her relationships with her daughters is strong for the most part. And I agree that Anissa had the strongest relationship with her last season, and it's nice to see that she wasn't pushed away for her sexuality or the way she lived anything about her life, but that Lynn embraced that part of her and remains her champion to this day, which is really nice, and to see a supportive relationship like that. And I also think that Jennifer opened up to her more intimately in the back half of the season with regards to the struggle she had with having powers and what that means for her future and if she wants them or not, because I feel like Lynn and Jennifer get along in that type of, you know, way of thinking. And outside of the family, I agree with Jess. I'm really glad that they kept Keisha around, because otherwise it would just seem like the ladies had no friends outside of their family, and it definitely gives Jennifer a bigger world outside the superhero life. So I find it interesting that even though, like, Anissa got a lot of focus in terms of her superpowers and all that during season one, it's Jennifer who kind of has more of a life outside of her family than Anissa does at the moment. I'd like them to do the same for Anissa in season two, because her world kind of shrunk after she found out she had powers. Like in the first episode, we saw her working, and maybe in another episode, we saw her teaching at the school as well. And then we saw her have interactions with Grace and Chenoa, but then Grace disappeared, and it was great while it lasted, but then she just, you know, fell off the edge of the earth. And we don't know how that dynamic is going to play in season two. So hopefully they'll be able to expand on that for her. I would definitely like to see Jennifer interact more with Keisha just on a day-to-day basis, like high school, going to class, what's prom going to be like for them, things like everyday things. And it would be great if instead of giving Lynn a male friend at her lab, that they had her interact with more females as well. because she currently is the only one who doesn't have anyone outside of her daughters and Jefferson. Right. Yeah. So
poor Lynn.
Yeah. And I feel like with Jennifer especially, you know, she's got kind of this kind of thing at school with her being like, you know, the queen bee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Assumed queen bee with her father being the principal or whatever. But I feel like Keisha shouldn't be her only friend. I feel like she has like she's a very popular girl.
Yeah.
She's popularity, but she's also got a lot of haters. But I feel like Keisha shouldn't be her only friend. Like, she should have like a lot more friends than she does at school. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Oh, and by the way, the fandom wiki page for Keisha does say that her father is Henderson. So at least there's
that. Get on that. I did
not. It was not a fever dream.
We trust you. We just don't trust the show to confirm that. but yeah, for me, I think I'm going to land somewhere in the middle. I'm going to give the show a B minus. It has a lot of strong dynamics that they can build on, but it gets a B minus because it's also like family. So like it helps them a lot in that
sense. A cheat.
Yes, they cheat a little bit. So I'd like to just see them expand on all of that and give all the ladies more female, you know, relationships outside their family, and also have them interact more. Like, I'd like to see more of Anissa and Jennifer's sisterly relationship. Like, I need more of that, because they touched upon it and they have those moments where they get along and are talking, and then the moments where they're acting like, you know, sisters and fighting with each other. But I need more
like, even like that, like, they never, you know, with them fighting with each other, it's kind of like glossed over a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm.
We're going to have them fight. Like, have them fight.
And what you said with Jennifer's haters, too, like, we had that one girl that she fought with early on.
Yeah.
But you might, like, I feel like they could expand more on that. Like, not just, you know, like, of course, you always want more positive depictions of female relationships, but there's also negative ones, right? Like that girl. So we can expand further on what it means to have haters.
Exactly. For Jennifer. Exactly. Oh, and actually, wasn't Henderson invited over to the Pierces for dinner once?
Yeah.
So, like, Keisha could have been there with him, but she wasn't, because she's also Jennifer's friend, so that was weird. The mystery. Anyway, so yeah, I think that Supergirl and Black Lightning so far are the strongest in terms of like deeper female relationships.
Right.
So there's lots of improvement for all the other shows. Yes. So we'll see what the coming season.
Yeah, Legends has the breadth.
Yes.
It just needs the depth. And exactly. Arrow just and Flash need to, you know, jump on board.
Yeah.
Step up.
So we hope you enjoy this episode. Again, you can find us on Twitter at DaisyTVGumption. Send us your feedback and thoughts and whatever you are feeling over on Tumblr through asks at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, or send us more of your feedback at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. And we will be back next week for another topical episode that we don't know what it is yet, but we will figure it out. So until next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.